This is WMUK from Western Michigan University. I'm Kara Lawrence, and I'm talking with violist Ori Kam of the Jerusalem Quartet, which performs on the Fontana Series this Saturday at Stetson Chapel on the campus of Kalamazoo College. Let's start with the anniversary of the Jerusalem Quartet. This is the 20th anniversary season. You're not an original member of the quartet. When did you join?
I joined the quartet 5 seasons ago. I knew these guys from almost the first steps they made as a string quartet, since we're all Israelis and Israel is a small place. And actually, we've had the opportunity to play together in different sextets and different formations when I joined the quartet. So when my former colleague, Amichai Gross, the violist, the original violist of the quartet, left, we kind of both had a very good idea of the other, and that, you know, joining the group felt quite natural and much easier than I think we all expected it to. And my 3 colleagues are the original founding members of the quartet, and they've been at it for over 20 years. Kind of difficult for us to pin down what would be the 20th anniversary, and we decided that really 1995 is the beginning of their professional life. So we decided that 2015 would be our 20th anniversary season.
It's nice to be able to ask you, as an outsider at one time, what your opinion of the Jerusalem Quartet was, their best features before you joined the quartet. What attracted you to them?
I think it's a great question. You know, at first, the Jerusalem Quartet really didn't follow a very typical Israeli career path for classical musicians, because usually what happens is that, you know, the very talented players of each generation goes abroad to study as early as they can. Usually it used to be the U.S., and now, you know, it's either Germany or the U.S. And the Jerusalem Quartet followed a very different career path. They enlisted into the military like every Israeli does, but they were helped in such that they enlisted together, in spite of the fact that there was a 3-year gap in ages between the youngest and oldest member. So one of the members waited 2 years before enlisting, and the other one enlisted a year before he was supposed to. So that by the time they finished their military service, they were basically already performing on such a professional level that it didn't really make sense to go to school. And they had, it's not that they didn't study in the meantime. They studied a lot with the Amadeus Quartet and different master classes and seminars and courses, but it didn't really make sense to enroll in a university the way they would have had they been kind of on their own. So observing that from the side always seemed very strange to me. And I never really understood it. I do now. I think that their commitment to the quartet is such a strong thing that it really overshadowed, you know, everything else, including their personal drive to go conquer the world on their own. And that I think is very special for teenagers. And I think it's that commitment that has always been the most irresistible thing about the Jerusalem Quartet. It's a certain life and death quality towards their relationship with the audience and the music and the stage, which is quite rare.
It sounds like they formed a brotherhood early on.
Well, yes, they emigrated in their early teens from the former Soviet Union to Israel. I think it's really the toughest age to immigrate to a new country. And I think that the quartet was really their haven. And I think that was one of the elements that you know, helped create this really strong bond.
Also makes me want to ask if there is any particular sort of military regimen to scheduling rehearsals or how to the discipline required.
Well, you know, I joined the quartet at the point when it was already going quite well. I think, you know, in the early stages of every quartet, there's kind of a daily rehearsal regimen. today is very different. Our schedule is planned about 3 years in advance. And so are our rehearsal periods and our programs and the projects that we're going to do. So there's a lot of planning going on. I don't know if it's military regimen, but there's a lot of planning that goes on to basically to facilitate us having a life outside of the quartet and family life. And that's not always easy with the amount of travel that we do. So keeping a very good distinction between quartet time and private time is important to us.
Have you been able to learn the special language of communication that these other three developed in 15 years of performing before you were invited to join the quartet?
No, that's another really interesting question. Absolutely. It takes time. I think there's so much minutia to the communication and dynamic of a string quartet that it's definitely not something that someone can just walk into. But I think the nice thing was that it was quite natural for me to assimilate into the communication while playing. It's the off the stage dynamic that I find always interesting and sometimes challenging, because they have been a part of each other's life for so long, and that dynamic changes all the time. There's a real kind of subtle give and take that I am not always very sensitive to. But we have a very good relationship, non-musical relationship, which I think is also a really wonderful thing about this quartet, is that there's a real personal relationship on top of the musical one, which makes a big difference since we spend so much time together.
And it can be just a wonderful experience to hear the unexpected from a new player. You know, as a violist, they could predict what their former colleague would sound like in any given moment. And here you are coming along with some surprises and new ideas.
You know, I mean, changing a member of a long-running string quartet can be extraordinarily traumatic for a group. I was just talking to some of the members of the Emerson Quartet this past summer about their recent change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something that every quartet really fears and dreads. And I think picking the right person is also holds in it a lot of opportunity for fresh ideas and fresh ways of looking at things and re-examining things and not taking a lot of things for granted. And I think that's really a fantastic opportunity for a quartet. And I think in our case, I think my colleagues will say that, you know, there were a lot of positives in the personnel change. But obviously, it requires a couple of years of reorganization and re-rehearsing a lot of things and rediscussing a lot of things. And I think that's good. I think habits are the enemy of music, and it's really important to re-examine things. But of course, I can only speak from my perspective as the new addition. I can't say how it was for them, but I'm sure, you know, I know that I brought a lot of new ideas to the quartet and new ways of doing things and on and off stage that, you know, some of them have been adopted, some of them have not, but there was definitely a lot of fresh ideas.
Speaking of fresh ideas, let's talk about Béla Bartók and his series of six quartets, the fifth of which you will feature on your program in Kalamazoo for Fontana. I looked up a quote from Béla Bartók, and he discussed, you know, his collection of Hungarian folk songs and wrote that it freed him from the tyrannical rule of major and minor keys, and eventually led him to a new conception of the chromatic scale, where every tone of which can be considered of equal value and can be used freely and independently. This must be one of the joys of discovering the world of Bartók, that he has a completely new way of looking at musical tones and harmonies.
Well, first of all, I think it's one of the truly great challenges for a string quartet, before anything else, because they are so
full of detail and complexity, and that's very special and challenging. And I think that one could spend a lifetime playing these pieces and not really catch everything. And then, you know, I think it's the perfect quote that you brought up, because the challenge of the 20th century for classical music was really what to do with harmony, because Wagner had, and Mahler and those kinds of composers, they really brought tonality to a point of no return. And I think that, you know, there are probably two great composers of the 20th century that really dealt with this issue extensively. There's Schoenberg and there's Bartók. Schoenberg basically created a system to negate the harmonic language that existed before that. And in a way, it's doomed to failure because it tries to negate something else. So creating a system that basically neutralizes the function of different notes in the scale is not the same as creating a system that has its own language. Bartók kind of went back and really built his tonal system based on something that's been there all along, and that is the folk music of the region where he lived, which was Romania, Hungary, Bohemia, Bulgaria. And that opened up an infinite world of rhythm and harmony and melody and just fantastic stuff that he's incorporated into his music, and then wrote it in the German structure and discipline of Beethoven, which just those two things manage, you know, that's his genius, bringing those two worlds kind of together. Then you have the quartets that have, you know, a perfect sonata form, but in a crazy Bulgarian rhythm and with a, you know, harmony structure that is something completely different. When one plays his music a lot, and that's the benefit of doing all six quartets, is getting to know his music more intimately, there are definitely certain notes that feel like they have a function, like they're a dominant, or that they pull towards another note. It's not that all the notes are completely free, it's that it's a different language. It's not the same language of Beethoven or Brahms. For me, that's why Bartók is the greatest composer of the 20th century, because I think he really answered that challenge in the most compelling way that is still really approachable and that the audience can really understand. I think Schoenberg veered towards territories where we're at today with a lot of contemporary music, where the audience leaves the chair at the end of the concert feeling like they didn't understand what they just heard. Don't get me wrong, it's not that Bartók is, you know, is as easily understandable as Mozart, but the music is very complex. But our approach to Bartók is to try to make it as transparent and understandable as possible. And I think that there are just so many elements in the music that are really transparent. The structures of things, the melodic profiles of things, the melodies, the rhythms, they're really things that an audience, someone sitting in the audience listening to it, can really get out of the chair at the end of the piece and kind of tap the rhythms or hum the melody.
You've chosen Haydn's Quartet, Opus 77, number 1, to open the program with, and you'll follow the Bartók, which sits in the middle of the program, with the familiar Dvorak, Opus 96, the American Quartet. Have you played this program in this order before, and does it work as a trio of quartets?
Well, we have our basic concept for putting programs together is to... The feature of the program is the string quartet. Not the players, but the string quartet is a medium.
and explore three different composers' approach to that medium and kind of create a whole from these three parts. And then the other part of this, what kind of called us to put this program together, is that for our 20th anniversary, we decided that we were going to focus on the six Bartok quartets as sort of our view towards the future as something, as a new project for us, and combine it with pieces that we have either recorded or played a lot, or pieces that are significant for us from our last 20 years. The Haydn Quartet is a piece that the quartet recorded and got a lot of accolades for. And the American Bartok Quartet was actually one of the first pieces that the quartet ever played that has a lot of meaning for the group. American Quartet of Dvořák is actually the first piece that the quartet played, so it's a very meaningful piece for the Jerusalem Quartet. I think that those three pieces together have a lot, they speak to each other. First of all, you know, Haydn is the Austrian, Dvořák being the Bohemian, the Czech, and Bartok being the Hungarian. Those three countries are, they are adjacent countries in Europe, but each of them has such its own particular musical language. You know, Haydn is more of the Germanic classical style. Dvořák has that whole central, northern central European Bohemian flavor, and of course the reference to the New World and the American Quartet. And then Bartok, with a lot of the Fifth Quartet, which has all these Bulgarian and Romanian elements to it. So it's really interesting how, you know, Europe is so colorful. We tend to think of Europe as, you know, being German music, but there is so much color and flavor and ethnic diversity in that region, which is basically probably the size of New York State, and that's really exciting.
Well, Mr. Kahm, thank you so much for talking about this program, and I wish you all the best of luck on your tour and travels and your time in Kalamazoo.
Thank you so much. We look forward to it.